there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed...
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit nfl.com/schedule release to learn more.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at price that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am your host, Gary Gremling. I am joined by Connor Orr. And Connor, we are still basking in the festivious nature of Super Bowl 55 that kind of was not very interesting. It was kind of a blowout.
It was a bad Super Bowl. Like, it kind of sucked. And it sucked because, you know, and I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit later on, but, like, there was one thing very wrong about the Chiefs that they couldn't stop. And, you know, we just sat there the whole game being like, well, when are they going to try to do something else about this problem? And they never did. And then the Buccaneers just scored 31 points and it was over.
They're waiting for game two of the best of seven.
I was like, yeah, like what? Now's the time to empty the coffers here. So let's go. But apparently Andy Reid wanted to save some stuff for 2021. So
it was wild. We'll get into it. And I'll just say at the top of the show, I have no interest in really criticizing Andy Reid, who has obviously been one of the greatest NFL coaches of all time. This was a head-scratcher, though, and it really was. Were they looking for the split in Tampa? And then you get back to Kansas City for games 3 through 5, and then the whole series can swing. But it was a strange night where a lot of things we just kind of took for granted and assumed going into this one, they just didn't really work out. But one thing you and I did talk about last week when we previewed this game was Todd Bowles and what Todd Bowles would do. And, you know, I always give the caveat, it's difficult to see exactly what was happening on the back end of the defense when you're watching the broadcast angle. You have to see the All-22 to see what was really happening back there. But it looked like, for the most part, it was a lot of two-deep safety. And he was kind of like, I bet our pass rush can dominate. And it did.
Yeah, I mean, after the game, I was doing some of the post-game interviews, and I think it was I think it was Shaq Barrett who said, you know, this was four-man pressure. I mean, it's not like we were doing anything exotic. Mm-hmm. Some of the Chiefs offensive linemen after the game had said, you know, there were some stunts and stuff that obviously you don't see on tape, but that's every game. And there's kind of some interesting stuff there that you have to adjust to at halftime. But yeah, the Buccaneers were running four-man pressure. And what was crazy was, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul wasn't as much the noisemaker. Shaq Barrett had a great game. But it was all over the place. It wasn't just the two guys on the ends that we were worried about. So, like, Vita Vea, for example, had the best average in terms of average separation per play out of any Buccaneers player. Then it was Shaq Barrett. And Ndamukong Suh was in the backfield mm-hmm. quite a lot during opportunities like that. So it was like it wasn't always the people that we thought that were wrecking the game, but at the same time, I mean, every time you looked at Remmers or on the left side or you know, on the right side, I mean, it was just a disaster. And it was the thing that we thought might come into play here, but I just thought at some point they would be able to figure out what Bowles is doing or put an extra guy or two in there to help, but they just never did.
Yeah, and as far as Bowles goes, you saw him bring a blitz on that 3rd and 11 on what ended up being the first points of the game on that drive, and Mahomes just sort of sidestepped it, got out of it, threw to the end zone, and I'm not sure how Tyreek Hill didn't catch that ball, but that was almost a signal to Bowles of to be like, oh, whoa, we're not gonna mix this in. Let's play it straightforward here, and we're probably going to be just fine. Let's not create any opportunities for Patrick Mahomes here.
Yeah, and that was something that we had talked about last week, too, was, you know, at what point do you want to take guys away from coverage when, you know, they're four or five weapons deep? And I think that you're right. That was probably the best realization that he'd made all afternoon. And of course, you're gifted a little bit by the fact that just from an emotional standpoint, the Chiefs just seem to be defeating themselves from the outset. You know, that drop pass by Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce had a bunch of big drops there mm-hmm. too. And so, Todd Bowles comes out of this looking every bit the plum defensive coordinator that we thought going in. And, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine us seeing it going exactly this way. But then again, we spent all week talking about the pass rush, the offensive line, and it ended up making all the difference in the game.
Well, one, it was boring because we talked about it for 2 weeks, and then we just sort of got sick of talking about it, and that's the way it goes.
Do you think that the Chiefs didn't listen to our podcast, and so they didn't know that there was going to be a problem with the protection up front?
I think they won't make that mistake next year. Yeah. Let's get into that a little bit. And again, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, boy, Andy Reid, what a bonehead that guy is. He is an all-time great coach, and he's probably going to win more Super Bowls here because the Chiefs will probably be back there the next couple of years. But they had 2 weeks to figure out how they were going to work around the fact that they had two backup offensive tackles in. They, if you look back over Andy Reid's career here, I mean, you know, like in Philadelphia, they used to chip a ton with like slot receivers. They used right. to have ways to help their tackles. I was actually, I mean, I wrote it in my Sunday morning column. I was looking for Byron Pringle to do a little bit of Jason Avant work here and sort of chip Shaq Barrett and Jason Pierre-Paul. I noticed them do it once all game, and that was it. And other than that, it was just like, you know, it's whatever. Maybe Mike Remmers will hold up on this play. And it's just like, nope, not going to happen.
And here's what blew my mind about that. Now, we are recording this at 11:40. And so the official, you know, personnel usage isn't going to be out until about 6 a.m. We'll be able to confirm this. But the Chiefs only threw 100 passes this year with multiple tight ends on the field. And mm-hmm. even in those formations, they were the fourth most efficient team out of multiple tight end passing in yep. the league when they were doing it. So it's not like it's slowing you down that much. And all you gain from having that extra guy on the field to help in protection, I don't know why they didn't just come out in that, you know what I'm saying? And just run that because that doesn't stop Patrick Mahomes. It gives him more time to run around, and you still have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce there.
Well, the other options are, if you want to get all your eligibles out, do you want to play quick game? I thought they I thought they were a little bit quicker getting the ball out in the first quarter than you'd normally see them be. And the other option is, do you want to put Mahomes on the move a little bit? Which, with a lot of guys, you put him on the move and it's like, oh man, well, we're cutting the field in half. You're never really cutting the field in half with Mahomes. You kind of already have the entire field available to you. So, again, it's just, it's a head scratcher. It's a head scratcher that they, it's one thing to go in and say, you know, we think Wiley and Remmers can hold up here. We think we'll be all right. But you got to have a plan B, and you got to be able to go to your plan B, and they didn't.
You're right. I mean, they did go quick early, but the screen game and sort of the pop passing game right off the bat was a disaster. And credit to Tampa Bay for,
yep.
I mean, they're the worst team. They're probably the worst team you want to play if that's how you want to kind of establish your offense and get the defense off your back, because they just have such good rangy linebackers that are going to be able to make those tackles. And they have a really good secondary in terms of stopping the run and tackling. And so that's tough if you're trying to get it to Pringle, if you're trying to get it to Tyreek Hill, any of those guys, just to, you know, get those 5 or 6 yard movement, quick passes. You know, that wasn't going to happen in a game like this. And so all of a sudden you're down to, you know, your plan B and plan C. But like we talked about, where was plan B and plan C? We just never ended up seeing it, to the point where it got to be pretty lean by the end of the game. It was just, you know, drop back, Mahomes, backyard football, try to find somebody. And that's really what it looked like.
He did have some spectacular incompletions, and that,
amazing.
That is not a backhanded compliment. I mean, they were just phenomenal plays. Tyreek dropped one. I still can't quite figure out what happened on that fourth down play in the fourth quarter where it was still sort of within reach. Did that hit Daryl Williams' hands before it?
It hit him in the head. Yeah, like Tyreek.
Kind of parallel to the ground. Travis Kelce had a just brutal game. He sort of padded the stats in garbage time, which was most of the second half, but he had that huge third down drop that came right after the goal line stand, and he had that that first third down in the second half before the long Butker field goal. He falls down, and then it's like you can't shake Lavonte David. I mean, he was cooking up like Denzel Ward in the postseason here, and like you couldn't shake a linebacker.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was stunning to me. I wrote afterwards that and I we are a podcast that deals in facts and reality, but at the same point, like I'm curious if you saw the same thing. Like I never saw the Chiefs this visibly dejected and like seemingly almost uninterested in what was going on. And it looked like, you know, every time somebody missed a block, they were down on themselves. Every time somebody missed a catch, they were sitting on the field, shaking their head. And, you know, this was not a Chiefs team. Like, you know, guys are usually picking each other up and firing each other up. And this from the beginning, just they looked like they felt like they had no gas the entire game. You know, there was no emotional surge. There was no comeback. It was just complete flatness. And then that translates to, like you said, the missed catches, the inability to break tackles, all that other stuff down the line.
This felt like, I bring this game up all the time because it's, before this Super Bowl, it was the most shocking Chiefs game I'd ever seen. It felt like a Sunday night game in October in the 2019 season when the Jacoby Brissett Colts went into Kansas City, and it was like this. They just, Patrick Mahomes didn't do anything. Justin Houston completely destroyed. It was Cam Irving filling in for Eric Fisher in that game. And this is what that felt like. And it was just stunning to see the Chiefs with just no answers. Although Tyreek Hill missed that Colts game. So you're down a weapon, you're down your left tackle. It sort of, continues to add up, but Tyreek Hill is in this game, and they're focusing all their coverage on him. You still have Travis Kelce, you still have Sammy Watkins. I don't know. This was head scratching, and certainly what was going on the other side of the ball for this defense. And by the way, I apologize to Bucks fans because we're really harping on the Chiefs here, and we still got to get to the Bucks, which we will get to in a second here. But I mean, Tyrann Mathieu gets an interception. They lose it on a dicey holding call. Matthew gets up in Brady's face and they just take that as a reason to absolutely go after Tyrann Mathieu on that late first half touchdown drive. And then you saw in the second half, Chiefs start trying to heat up Tom Brady, and it's just screen passes. It's just little quick stuff that beats the blitz, and it just had to be infuriating if you were on that Chiefs sideline.
Yeah, by the way, Tyrann Mathieu just said this as we're recording the podcast, that that Tom Brady called him something inappropriate on the field, which is why he got in his face.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll ever know what that is, but that is... that is an interesting little subplot here.
That is one to that will fill some content for a lot of people over the next couple of weeks.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
So let's, we'll set that aside for a second. Let's congratulate the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are Super Bowl champions. Tom Brady, yeah, we're 13 minutes into the show now, Connor, and it's time to talk about Tom Brady and what he has accomplished here. And look, you and I get frustrated by this because we are men of logic and spreadsheets and numbers, and we have difficulty with things like love and confidence and human emotions. And therefore, it is really tough to when someone says, like, well, you have to see the effect that Tom Brady has on the locker room. And it's like, I guess. But now it's like, oh, okay, I guess that's right.
Yeah, and there is something to that. I think if you go back and you interview some of the old his old Patriots teammates, there were people that went on to other teams and they played in other locker rooms, and they would say that, you know, Tom Brady does prepare better and more methodically than anybody else in the league. And it's just, you know, it's one of those situations where once you get the snowball rolling on it, once you learn how to prepare and then you accumulate the resources that Tom Brady does and the notebooks and the institutional knowledge, it becomes something of an operation. And so I think that, you know, it's almost like you have 9 of Nick Saban's research assistant head coaches, and or assistant coaches in air quotes there, on your team. assembling a dossier. And, you know, Tom Brady in Tampa Bay or in New England used to give these guys notes on Saturdays before the game and say, hey, I think this is going to happen. I think that is going to happen. That stuff matters, you know, and that stuff matters in big games. It matters when Tom Brady's already faced Steve Spagnuolo a million times, and it matters when he takes basically 14 days before the Super Bowl to sit at home by himself and ship his family away and watch nothing but Steve Spagnuolo tape and to come up with something that's going to gut them. And it's exactly what he did. And I think the only disappointing part for fans was that it was not a beautiful, aesthetically pleasing thing. It was, you know, we're going to run a pretty straightforward offense and just kind of pick apart your weak spots.
Yep. They benefited from a lot of penalties in the first half. Some of them were a little bit dicey. Especially in a year where officials really, the theme was let them play, especially that Chevarius Ward holding call that erased the Tyran interception. That was a really big deal there. But other than that, yeah, like the Mike Evans pass interference, the 34-yard pass interference on Bashaud Breeland at the end of the first, absolutely legitimate call. It's not as cool as seeing Mike Evans actually catch the ball like that. That has a feeling of satisfaction when you're viewing that, as opposed to two guys get tangled up and the guy defensive back has clearly been beat and he ends up just reaching out and grabbing Mike Evans. But the one play that gave me, you know, gave me the goosebumps, I thought it was just the absolutely beautiful football, was the Leonard Fournette. That's a classic power concept. Ali Marpet got out there, and I think it was Chevarius Ward was out there on the edge.
Buried
for the Chiefs.
Somebody on that play.
I mean, he was, you could see Ward was coming up on Marpet, and he was just like, this is over. And he just sort of ducked out of the way instead of taking on the block. I mean, there's nothing Ward can do at that point. He's giving up 120 pounds to Marpet.
You make the business decision.
Yep. It was absolutely beautiful, though. It was perfectly executed, perfect call for that moment, and Fournette gets the walk-in touchdown. That was gorgeous.
Yeah, that was really pretty. And I was happy for Playoff Lenny. Playoff Lenny's had a good couple weeks here. Just your life in general, I think, improves when you move from Jacksonville down to Tampa Bay. And I think that's true of anybody who's done that in the Florida area, but especially Leonard Fournette. So good for him. But yeah, no, I think that we all get wrapped up in what we think Bruce Arians' offense is and should be. You know, how many times did Tony Romo say about, you know, how amazing they are in terms of efficiency and all that stuff? And none of that's true. Like, Tony Romo said during the game that Tampa Bay runs on first down all the time because they're so good at it. They're the second worst team in the NFL in running the ball on first down. You know, there are very few teams actually that are worse at it. And so, but for some reason, it worked today. And I think that that's what is amazing, is the willingness to kind of stick with the functionality of the ground game, and then just to pick up your little first downs where you can. Gronk coming in the way that he did, and sort of knifing that defense open. They had a lot of answers today, for sure.
Hit one up the seam to Gronk. They hit one sort of a deep in route to Mike Evans at the end of the second quarter there. I mean, they had it again. It's not a beautiful, sustained offense that they're running out there, but you know, if you're going to play with the lead, it is more than good enough. Should we hit some miscellaneous stuff before we're going to have plenty of offseason look ahead and other things to discuss here, Connor, but just miscellaneous things from the night.
I've been covering the NFL since 2010, so it's only the third Super Bowl that I've seen at home. And so this was the first time in years that I got to see commercials. And I will say that the oat milk commercial was amazing. It was like beyond my wildest expectations. It was perfect. So that was good. I really liked that. But in terms of on-field miscellaneous things, I thought that I was amazed at how much kind of baked in animosity that we didn't realize was there. You know, a lot of this was a much more emotional Super Bowl than I had expected, given the fact that there was no buildup, right? You know, there's no week before the game. There's no chance for anybody to really say anything stupid. I think the closest thing to a controversial comment was Jason Pierre-Paul saying he didn't know who Mike Remmers was. You know, after the game, we see Antoine Winfield got penalized for taunting Tyreek Hill and talking about how much he hated the way that Tyreek Hill acted the last time they played. I guess I didn't realize how much bad blood existed between these two teams. And you could tell that one team really sort of carried that with them emotionally. I mean, Tampa Bay did come out aggressive. They made some big hits early on and did kind of set the tempo in that way a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Antoine Winfield with a peace sign at Tyreek Hill was one that was that'll be a lasting image. I mean, that'll
be fantastic. It was fantastic.
These teams, I mean, what, probably 4 years from now, unless we see a Super Bowl rematch, I guess Winfield and Tyreek will still be around.
Tyreek Hill will be maybe in 4 years, he'll be like Ted Ginn or like Tavon Austin, where you're like, oh yeah, he's on the team. And then once every 3 months, you'll be playing somebody who forgot to add a wide receiver on their fantasy team and they pick them up. And then it's the 1 week where they catch four balls for 138 yards and two touchdowns. You know, I think that's kind of the future the distant future that we see for Tyreek Hill. But yeah, they'll be around to yell at each other for a while and that'll be fun. Everybody likes that.
He's got a Joey Galloway phase first before he reaches that, and then we'll see what happens. But yeah, this was Tommy Townsend, the Chiefs punter, rough yeah. night, and I'm kind of thankful for his sake that this one ended up not being very close, because he was he was having some issues out there. He didn't end up on the field in the second half because they were playing four down football. But that was the other amazing thing about this is, even when it got to the second half, it was like, boy, Bucks better put up some more points here. This is four down territory the rest of the game for Patrick Mahomes. He can't not put up points. They didn't put up points after the Harrison Butker field goal to open the third quarter. I mean, that is exceptional.
You know, and what I wrote after the game was just something that I'm generally curious about, because I think it can go one of two ways, right? One is that we just assume they didn't have two of their starting tackles. They didn't have their best offense, arguably their second best offensive lineman, who opted out before the season. And so, you know, let's forget what we saw during the Super Bowl, because it was a complete indictment of the pass rush and nothing further should be taken from it. Or do we look at it like when New England beat the Rams in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, where, and I hate the use of the term blueprint, but that we see a more effective and replicable way of beating a very good offense in a place where a defensive coordinator can spend the whole offseason studying it. You can probably sign a few guys to help you do what you need to do there. And then do we start to see people sort of chip away at the things that the Chiefs do best, right? Like, is this, you know, I'm not saying Patrick Mahomes won't be around for 20 years and be great. I think that's true. But this itineration of the Chiefs and the quote unquote dynasty in the making, like maybe their long-term prospects were hurt greatly by today. I think that that's absolutely possible.
What I'm curious about with the Chiefs is when they reach the point where Tyreek has lost a half a step, and at that point Travis Kelce is not in the league, when the weapons slow down, I don't really know if what the Bucks did tonight was replicable, because I don't think you're ever going to dominate in the pass rush against really any team like we saw the Bucks do tonight to the Chiefs. And on top of that, I don't want to be one of those guys who's like, well, you know, if Tyreek catches that ball and Kelce catches that ball, but there is a choose your own adventure here that
you're right.
If Kelce makes a play, if Tyreek makes a play, if Darrell Williams catches the ball that hits him in the hands, this game might be a little bit different. Make no mistake, the Bucks outplayed the Chiefs severely. They outcoached the Chiefs severely, which was kind of the most surprising thing tonight. But I don't think the Chiefs were... I don't think this was an impossible path for them to come back on.
I don't either. You know, I think that they probably will still be back. You know, am I ready to say that, like, the Chargers are going to take over in the AFC West? Or no, I don't think that that's on anybody's radar. That said, I just think that, you know, maybe they're not as feared as they once were, you know, and that's a nebulous concept too, right? But maybe teams go at them a little bit more than they used to. You know, they don't sit on their heels and just pray that Patrick Mahomes isn't picking them apart. Maybe they go after him a little bit more. I don't know. And again, another factor in the fold there is that Patrick Mahomes doesn't have turf toe probably next year. And not that it affected his mobility that much tonight. I think he was still as functional in that aspect as he normally is. But I don't know. I could see them just becoming less of like that, I don't know, what's a good superhero character that, like, a villain that you can, like, kind of chip away at, you know, maybe like the, like, Boss One on Sonic, you know, that kind of thing.
Boy,
the more times you bop him on the head, the less intimidating it gets than Eggman, and then all of a sudden he just kind of combusts, you know?
That's a deep cut.
Andy Reid looks a little like Eggman, Dr. Eggman. I could see that.
Played by Jim Carrey in the movie, if I picked up correctly on the trailer.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. I guess I'll say this as we wrap up sort of the game portion of this, and then we'll get into some of the off-season look-aheads, but maybe the lesson is, and this just feels too on the nose, and that's why I don't like it. But maybe the lesson is you're just going to have to ramp up the pass rush here. If you're the Bills and you are depending on sort of, you know, they have Jerry Hughes, but they don't have a whole lot else coming off the edge to wreck games, maybe that's the answer you have to come up with. Because, I mean, look, we even saw in that game, when they had clean shots at Patrick Mahomes, Mahomes was escaping and making big plays. I guess you just have to dominate to a certain level with this pass rush that most teams are not capable of. So the answer is you got to find a couple of elite pass rushers, especially once you know Eric Fisher and whether it's Mitchell Schwartz or whoever becomes their next starting right tackle might be.
You know, to perfectly disprove my last point, you know what this game was exactly like? It was like when the Jets beat the Patriots in the AFC Championship game back in 2010, and like Sean Ellis was a man possessed that day, and Trevor Price, and how often they got into the backfield against Brady. And then what did we say after that, right? This is how you beat Brady, is constant interior pressure, simulated pressure, all this stuff. This is the blueprint. And then you beat up Gronk at the line. This is how you do it. Patriots are going to start to be diminished, and this is how it works. And maybe that's the same thing with the Chiefs, where to a degree that's true, but how often you can actually replicate it is the issue. And we might not see another team be able to beat the Chiefs up this way for a long time. I mean, maybe for another 2 years. I don't know. Maybe Patrick Mahomes wins the next two Super Bowls, you know?
I was hoping you were going to say it reminded you of, like, the Frog King at the end of Super Mario Brothers 2.
So Super Mario Brothers 2 is terrible. It's the worst out of all of them. And you know, so I'm a 1 in 3 if I have to play it with regularity. So
yeah, 2 was I tried to do that last offseason. I tried to make it through all of them. I got to 64 and I hate it. It makes me angry. I despise that game and I stopped playing.
Mario 64 or Mario 2?
Mario 64. No, I went through 2. I did 3. I did the whatever the NES one was. Boy, 64 though. And I know that was like groundbreaking when it came out, but it is just miserable.
I'm literally looking at my N64 with Mario 64 in it right now. I can show it to you. I can like turn my laptop around and show it to you. Before I have one interesting fact on Super Mario 2, and then mm-hmm. we can move on with this. Did you know that wasn't supposed to be Super Mario 2? Like Super Mario Brothers 1 was so good, and it went so bananas that they were like, oh shit, we need a sequel. And so they just took another game that was already done and just sort of like pasted the Mario people over.
He skinned it.
Yeah. Like, and just put like the, and like, so like it had nothing to do with Mario. And like, remember, cause in that game you like dug up like turnips and stuff and you were throwing them at like stuff and everyone was like, what the hell is going on? It's like, cause that was a game totally, it was supposed to be something else. And they just freaked out and made it a Mario game. So.
I wish they had done that with like Tecmo Bowl. And like Luigi becomes Bill Romanowski, and then it's like, I don't get this. What am I doing here?
Just you know, that's something maybe a non-Buccaneers fan or Chiefs fan might appreciate from this podcast. You know, you can walk away with something.
All right, Connor, you hang on for 1 second, because it is once again time for the SI Fantasy segment presented by DraftKings. And once again, for the last time in the 2020/21 season, Michael Fabiano of SI Fantasy and the SI Fantasy podcast joins me. And Fabs, we're going to do something a little different here. We're going to keep it Super Bowl-centric. We're probably not going to get a whole lot into the Patrick Mahomes, Chad Henne quarterback controversy that's now brewing going into next year. But these running backs on both sides, pretty interesting dudes at this point.
You think so? I mean, the Chiefs at this point, I still feel like are going to be leaning on Clyde Edwards-Helaire to start next season. Damian Williams was, of course, an opt-out due to COVID. Mm-hmm. He's still under contract. Le'Veon Bell's not under contract. I don't know that he would be back. I think people have to remember that. Before the Chiefs signed Le'Veon Bell, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was on pace for over 1,800 scrimmage yards. Yeah. He was on pace for over 1,300 rushing yards. He was doing pretty well. And the whole Le'Veon Bell thing just turned that thing sideways from a fantasy perspective, because the Glide was a first-round pick mm-hmm. in a lot of redrafts. I think he'll be the guy, and it wasn't a great finish to the season. I don't know if he was back at 100%. It seemed like he was, but they were using Darrell Williams a little bit more. Of course, in the Super Bowl, they were getting their brains beat in, so the running game kind of went by the wayside. But I would suggest, I think the Glide is probably going to end up being a second or third round pick.
Okay.
Maybe more of a third round pick next season in fantasy drafts.
All right. I like that value. Gut feeling.
It could be a good value. Andy Reid's always had success when it comes to the backfields, dating back to Philadelphia. And I remember talking about this in the non-existent preseason. Deuce Staley, Brian Westbrook, LeSean McCoy, Jamal Charles, Kareem Hunt. He had a lot of success. And Edwards-Helaire was right on track to be successful until they inexplicably, for some reason, decided to bring in a washed up Le'Veon Bell. And it all kind of went sideways from there. Things will be better in 2021 for the former LSU superstar.
So we have the Bucs, Ronald Jones. We have Leonard Fournette. Fournette is a pending free agent here. Let's assume Fournette's coming back. I mean, we know there's never a robust market for running backs here, so they can probably afford to bring Fournette back, even though they have some other guys to address as far as re-signing. But if this ends up being a Fournette-Jones backfield again, what's your feeling? Who would you rather have out of that duo?
Ronald Jones. And I know Fournette was the hero in the post. He was the highest scoring running back based on fantasy points in the postseason. Yeah. And honestly, it wasn't close. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was really good. And I think Fournette did play his way back onto the Buccaneers. I think it's the best fit for him. I don't know that he's going to end up anywhere else in the league and be a featured back. And I think it would end up being a situation where Ronald Jones would be the lead back and Fournette would be, I don't want to say a complimentary back, but it would end up being somewhat of a committee scenario, and Fournette would be more of the pass-catching back, which, remember, in 2019, he had 76 catches, and he looked pretty good down the stretch as a pass catcher. LeSean McCoy, whether or not he retires remains to be seen. I would guess he probably would sign with Philadelphia, retire, and that would be the end. They also have Keyshawn Vaughn in the mix there too. But I would guess at this point that Fournette, who was a Super Bowl hero, I mean, mm-hmm. he put up very good numbers, had another good run, 4 touchdown, second in fantasy points in the Super Bowl behind only Mr. Super Bowl, Rob Gronkowski. Fournette will likely end up being, at least in my opinion, in some sort of committee next season in Tampa Bay with Ronald Jones, which will hurt the value of both players, but yeah. Sometimes we just can't have nice things.
That's That's the way life goes. Let's go receiving options on both sides. Let's keep it on the Bucs side. Again, questions here. Chris Godwin is hitting free agency. Antonio Brown was just on the one-year deal as well. I would presume they are open to bringing Antonio Brown back. I don't know if there's a big market for him for many reasons, but it's still, you know, a lot of mouths to feed on an offense that doesn't always throw it around a lot.
Right. My guess would be, and also, you know, you mentioned that Tampa Bay has a bunch of free agents. Shaq Barrett's going to be a free agent. Lavonte David's going to be a free agent. And Ndamukong Suh's going to be a free agent. They could probably get Antonio Brown back. He would be an attractive piece for them. Wouldn't cost a ton of dough, but the dude's super talented. We know that. I kind of think Chris Godwin might be the odd man out. He won his Super Bowl. A lot of teams could be looking at him. I'm actually going to be posting my top 20 fantasy free agents for 2021 on SI Fantasy here this week. I will project every player on that top 20 in terms of where I'd like to see them land from a fantasy perspective. And Godwin will stay on the East Coast, but it won't be Tampa Bay. And that's what they call a teaser, folks. So I would see
Mike Evans. Me after the show.
I will. I it's not like I know anything. It's just a guess. It's for fantasy purposes. But Evans, AB, here's something that I can absolutely see this happening. I can absolutely see this happening. How about Julian Edelman goes to Tampa, reunites with his guys. God.
Too much.
They let Godwin go because they have to keep their defensive superstars, the young kids they got there. As much as I love Godwin in Tampa, there's a lot of mouths to feed. I'd rather see him go someplace else where he is the guy, right? From a fantasy perspective, that's kind of what you want. But the Buccaneers have a lot of very important defensive pieces that they're going to need to keep, whether it be re-signing, tag, whatever the case may be. So Godwin, out of the top three Buccaneers wide receivers, we know Evans is still under contract. I would see AB coming back on a much cheaper deal than Chris Godwin is certainly going to be looking for because he's in the prime of his career.
All right, other side, Chiefs here. Sammy Watkins, free agent. I guess the question is, I think Watkins walks. I think you're looking at probably Mecole Hardman taking on a bigger role, but is there any room for a consistent fantasy guy outside of Kelce, Hill, Edwards-Helaire, which is really just weird to say because it's the best offense in football.
Yeah, but when you look past the top two, which of course are Hill and Kelce, and then you could throw Clyde Edwards-Helaire in there, but again, we don't know what the impact of Damian Williams could be, assuming he's back and he's still under contract with Kansas City. Sammy Watkins didn't really make a consistent fantasy impact in Kansas City. Mecole Hardman hasn't either. DeMarcus Robinson hasn't either. I'm not going to bring up Byron Pringle. So it's kind of the top two receiving options and everybody else. And I saw some stuff online, people projecting some of the top free agent wide receivers and where they might go. And, you know, there was a couple that had Allen Robinson going to Kansas City. I don't want that. I want Allen Robinson going someplace. He's going to be the guy, right? Because I'm selfish and I want fantasy points. And so could Kansas City bring in a veteran wide receiver? Could they keep Sammy Watkins, bring him back, re-sign him? I mean, sure, that's within the realm of possibility. Did they make the role for Mecole Hardman a little bit bigger? Sure, that's also within the realm of possibility. That would be my guess for this pass attack. But at the end of the day, when you've got so many targets funneling to two guys, and even in a Mahomes offense, and we all know Mahomes is great, it's really hard to have enough targets, enough room for another player to have big numbers. We haven't seen that in Kansas City. We haven't. And I can't go back to Philadelphia, too, as a comparison when Andy Reid was the coach there, because they never really had all that many good wide receivers to begin with, right? I mean, it was always like some guy like Freddie Mitchell or Todd Pinkston or, you know, whatever the case may be. Going back, folks, you can go look at them up on Pro Football Reference. But I would think that Hardman would be the third option in the passing game if they don't bring back Watkins, because I don't know that they would go out and sign a big name free agent wide receiver. Clearly, Kansas City has some needs, and the offensive line is going to be one of those needs.
All right, Fabs. We appreciate you stopping by every week. I very much enjoyed our visits. You and I.
Me too, man.
We're going to keep talking. I mean,
there's no off season. I'm going to be writing 3 to 4 columns a week for SI throughout the entire off season, and I use that term lightly. So we're going to have a ton of stuff to talk about, man. So I will be talking to you very soon, my friend. I guarantee it. Guarantee it.
All right, Fabs. Have a great, I don't know, 4 hours of off season here, and we'll get back at it.
All right, my brother. I'll talk to you soon.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
All right, Connor, this is the time of year. The season is officially over. They're not going to play any more games in the 2020 season. I hope I'm not ruining anyone's day by pointing that out. But this is the time of year when you and I, we sign each other's yearbooks. We say our goodbyes. I hope you have a great summer, and I'll see you in the fall. But I did want to give out some genuine thanks. First and foremost, to Shelby Royston, our producer, who he is out tonight. He is on the injured list, not available tonight. Scott Brody, pinch hitting. Scott Brody coming down from his ivory tower. Our director of podcasts is pinch hitting for Shelby tonight. He's also, Scott's in a different time zone. It's midnight here on the East Coast, and if my math is correct, it is 11 a.m. where Scott is. So he's got the whole day in front of him. But Shelby, along with making the shows actually sound suitable for human consumption, he organizes a lot of what we do. He is just an absolute rock for us, and especially with all the craziness going on with, the pandemic. It was really nice to have that kind of presence this year, and it's always nice, and we greatly appreciate Shelby.
Yeah, I mean, speaking as part of the Weekside podcast team, I mean, anytime anybody has given us feedback on something that they liked about the podcast, it was Shelby's idea. He is the best, and we wish him a speedy recovery and a hearty thanks for a great year this year.
We also do thank Scott, who has been a big supporter of the podcast. Ben Eagle, who is moving on to NPR, as a matter of fact. Yeah, this will be his last time in the end credits here. I know that's everyone's favorite part of the show. So Ben has always been a big supporter of the MMQB podcast. And I guess, especially in the case of myself and for you, Connor, look, our families are home all the time, and we're home all the time, and we both have small kids. We have kids who one might categorize as baby in age, and it is not always easy to get the shows done. I think for both of us, our kids have just been incredibly cooperative, and our wives, who certainly have their own work lives to worry about, have been incredibly helpful in just helping us be able to do these shows in a way that, I mean, just quite frankly, you probably do not hear the terrified screams of children in the background when you listen to the show.
But they exist. It is omnipresent. Mm. And so another credit to Shelby for making all that background noise go away. But yeah, no, there are days like this when, you know, you are struck by that gratitude. You know, like we said, you know, my wife will, who works full time too, she'll be on Zoom calls, but the trade off there is so great. I mean, a podcast is such a longer commitment. You know, it's like an hour and a half of actual taping. There's the planning before the taping, the discussions afterwards on what we can do better, and to be able to wrangle the kids while, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff is going on, for our producers to be able to understand when somebody kicks the door down and wants to grab the microphone to sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, which happened back in March, actually, you know, to understand that, to be able to cut that out, to edit it, I mean, you know, and for everyone to listen to it too. I think, you know, after the season, you do kind of get hit by all that gratitude, everybody being able to make that possible. So that's very much appreciated.
And of course, we thank you folks out there who listen to all these shows. And if you missed any during the season, go back and listen now. You'll basically get to relive the entire season. You do it all off season, just every day. Listen to all, 21 shows here. And the magic just comes flooding back in.
Yeah. If I could add one more to that.
Please do.
Yeah, we lost a great colleague in the football writing world this week in Chris Wessling. And mm-hmm. as a lot of people know, I came from around the NFL where I was lucky enough to sometimes be on the podcast with Chris, but more lucky just to be his friend, to be able to text with him about books and raising our families together, all that stuff. You know, he was always the first guy that you'd see at Super Bowls, especially, you know, that was the thing that I would think of, was I couldn't wait to hit the ground, you know, to get to the hotel bar, because Chris was just gonna light it on fire with great stories and, you know, just a wonderful person. And so, you know, that kind of contributes to a little bit about what we're saying, is the appreciation to get to do this every day. And, you know, you think about all the great people who have been there, you know, along the path, and there's nobody better than Chris. And on a night like this, especially, think about, you know, how much he's missed, and, you know, how much the world misses is going to miss his writing. You know, there's mm-hmm. just no doubt about that. And so, you know, any time that, you know, I've tried to do something, I know that Chris has been a huge part of it. He's hugely influential across the business, and so the world lost a really good writer, but just an even better person this week. So wanted to make sure we could mention that as well.
No, I'm glad you mentioned it, Connor. And I hesitate to bring this up because I don't want to be the guy who is like, well, let me tell you my story type of thing. I didn't know Chris at all. He DM'd me a couple years ago with just an exceptionally nice note about something I had written, which was just the kind of thing where you see, it's like, okay, we're strangers and you wrote me this super nice note. I don't write notes like this to my friends and people I know. And, I mean, gosh, just take a trip through Twitter for a couple minutes and you can see just how incredibly well-liked and just what a great dude he was. And obviously, you know what he was. If you follow the NFL, you know who he was as a writer and as a podcaster. And gosh, yeah, he's going to be just...
it's appropriate to struggle to come up with the words, because sometimes you can't with Chris. I mean, there's too much good. You know, there was just way too much good. And that's the bottom line, you know.
All right. Let's talk about the Bucks offseason.
Let's do it.
And so, Connor, I'm looking at these two teams, and we'll get to the Chiefs. The Chiefs are kind of intact. The Bucks are going to be really interesting. And look, you know, if anyone was wondering, Tom Brady's not retiring. He's coming back next year. I don't think that surprised anyone. He did sort of, I guess, officially announce it on the podium after the game. The decisions they're going to have to make, and the two I have kind of circled, Chris Godwin is one. Shaq Barrett is the other. And then you have some other guys, whether it be Lante David and Dom Kung Su. Does Gronk come back? To me, Godwin and Barrett are the two least replaceable guys among their free agents. And we'll start with Barrett, because I think Barrett has basically earned the right to be one of the top paid non-quarterbacks in football at this point. He's 28. I know it feels like he's been around forever, but he's 28. And, you know, the rule of thumb is these veteran contracts are essentially 3-year contracts. So pass rushers age well. It's a it's a proactive position. You're not getting sort of your body stuck in sort of reactionary poses and things like that they can sort of wear down a little bit further. We've seen a lot of great edge rushers play well into their mid-30s. I think Shaq Barrett's he's easily like a $20 million a year guy for the next 3 years.
I think so too. The problem is I would not be surprised if we see that market diminish a little bit. Now the cap is going to be slightly higher than we ended up expecting it to be. It's not going to be flat. It's going to go up just a little bit. But the teams that you would normally see as the ones who are going to shop at the top end of the market for a pass rusher because they're one pass rusher piece away, I don't know if a lot of those teams are going to have the ability to spend that kind of money. You know, I think that when we've seen other, like sort of the franchise tagged pass rushers come close to the market, even the trade market hasn't really materialized, you know, unless it's someone like DeForest Buckner, where you have that true inside outside presence and you can be a little bit more versatile there. So I don't know. I'm interested to see what happens. But if you're Jason Light, you can't let any of these guys go at this point. You know, you've sort of created a situation where you have to live in the now and live in the present, and you have to bring back Shaq Barrett. You have to bring back Chris Godwin, because if you don't win the Super Bowl next year, now everyone's going to be like, well, that's because, you know, you let one piece A or piece B go, and all of a sudden, you know, we just weren't that good enough.
Godwin's the one that is interesting to me, because if you're going to have to spend money elsewhere, on one hand, you know, Godwin is probably a guy you look at and say like, oh, well, here's a top of the market guy. The thing is, the receiver market is completely flooded right now. And I think you're going to see, I think there's a good chance Allen Robinson and or Kenny Golladay make it out there. You know, you have those second tier guys, Juju Smith-Schuster, Will Fuller, Curtis Samuel, not to mention the veteran T.Y. Hilton, Sammy Watkins, A.J. Green. And you have a draft class coming up that is, you don't want to get carried away with it, but it is gaining similar repute to the wide receiver draft class from last year that was considered historically great. Mm-hmm. So again, I wrote about this for the upcoming issue of SI. It is actually a sidebar to a Connor Orr piece, and I'm very proud to be a part of it. But if you look around the league, these teams are looking at like A.J. Brown, who is on a 4-year, $5.6 million deal. Terry McLaurin, who I think is like 3.8 over 4 because of the rookie wage scale. And even like a Justin Jefferson, who's a first-round pick. Justin Jefferson is going to make $13 million over his first 4 years. And obviously those guys can renegotiate, but not until after year 3. So all these receivers, all these stud receivers are getting locked in on incredibly cheap deals. And if you're the Bucks and you're already paying Mike Evans, and let's be honest, they're probably open to bringing back Antonio Brown. I mean, you heard all Super Bowl week, you know, Antonio's been great in the locker room, and that seems to be all they really care about. And we won't get too deep into the just many, many reasons that Antonio Brown's considered toxic for most franchises. But Antonio Brown will be available on a discount deal, and the Bucks will most likely take it, even though he'll, you know, he's scheduled to be facing a civil trial for sexual assault around week 13 next year. I think Brown is back. And then if you're looking at it as the Bucks, it's like, well, we're investing in Mike Evans. We have Antonio Brown. We got to spread the money around some of these other places. I wouldn't be surprised if Godwin gets away.
Yeah, I could see that, unless they somehow convince him that this is his best chance to, you know, maybe you maximize your market next year when the salary cap is more generous and there's going to be a higher percentage of teams that are willing to spend, you know, at the top of the market on a receiver. You know, I doubt he does like a high end 1 year deal, you know, or something like that. But, you know, you don't know. I mean, you don't know what's possible at this point. But yeah, no, you're right. I think if there's one maneuver you make, it's there. And Bruce Arians even said it after the game. He's like, I have the utmost confidence in Jason Light that he's going to nail the draft, and we're just going to be right back here again next year. And maybe they have that kind of relationship. That, you know, there aren't a lot of coaches and GMs, I would say Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch being one, where you can you can count on the draft as being a direct pipeline to your offense and getting the things exactly the way you need it. That said, Tristan Wirfs was a great pick this year. Mm-hmm. He filled in and he was phenomenal. And Jason Light's nailed a lot of these picks that he's nailed. And so maybe a receiver on a rookie contract is in the cards there for sure.
Yeah, look, Wirfs, Antoine Winfield, those guys are on bargain basement contracts, making, you know, a fraction of what a free agent veteran makes at those positions. The Chiefs, I don't really know what to say about the Chiefs here. You got to get your tackles healthy. Maybe you end up finding a replacement for Mitchell Schwartz, who sort of started to show his age finally this season. But other than that, Sammy Watkins probably walks, so you're looking for an X receiver type guy. But I don't know. I don't know how high that is on your list of priorities to make sure you get a quality, I guess, fourth option in the offense.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. I'm going to sound as dumb as I did before the season started. I'm not sure that I pencil in the Buccaneers to come back here next year. But, you know, you can play this all in a loop when they're playing in the Super Bowl again in L.A. next year, I guess. I tweeted this, but I really do have some work to do. I got to go back and delete a lot of bad Buccaneers takes. Like, I've had a lot of bad ones this year. I think I've written like 3 or 4 times that this team is not being built in the correct way. And yeah, so here we are naturally with them lifting the Lombardi trophy.
I have written repeatedly over the past month that their offense is broken and not functional in 2020. And I don't know if I want to completely back off of that take. I don't think it's a very good offense. But it was certainly good enough, and with what the defense was doing, that was enough on that side of the ball. I do want to pat myself on the back, though, because after they lost that Thursday night game to the Bears, that really ugly Thursday night, they lost Vita Vea in that game, and it was just a terrible game. I had written them in, I think I picked them like 3 in the power rankings after that or something, and just got a torrent of people saying I did not respect the sanctity of the power rankings by doing that. And I was just kind of like, I don't know. I think they're a complete team. I think the defense is really good. And I think the offense is probably going to be fine by the end of the year, which I guess at the very end, in literally the final game, the offense reached a point where it was fine.
Well, let me backtrack here for a minute on the idea of sanctity in the power rankings. Whenever it was my turn to do the power rankings this year, Mitch yeah. Goldish, our editor who compiles the power rankings, used to undo a lot of the changes that he made that I would make because he said that I was not taking it seriously when all I was doing was I was positioning certain teams in certain places, and yes, it might have looked a little outlandish, but it was just trying to overcorrect some of the other power rankings that I'd seen elsewhere that I didn't like. And so there was a method behind my madness, but that was largely censored by the magazine's top brass. And so here we are. So
too many people meek with their power rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Take a stand.
Be powerful. It's your chance. You know?
There you go. There you go. It did give me a chance to write an intro about Nikola Tesla, which is really the only thing I wanted to do this season. I get to cross that off my bucket list.
There it is. Making dreams happen.
Real quick before we go, I will speak for you and say that we both think the Chiefs are probably your favorite in the AFC coming into next year. Is that okay, Connor?
That's very fair. Yep.
when you look at the NFC, I would throw the Packers, Bucks, Rams, 49ers all up there on the upper echelon. I think there's a case to be made for the Saints, depending on what you think of the quarterback situation, and the Seahawks, depending on what you think of the non-quarterback situation. But I don't know. I mean, I think I'd call this 49ers, Rams, Packers on tier one, Bucks on tier 1.5, and Saints, Seahawks tier 2.
Yeah, I agree with you, Gary. I like the 49ers there, and the 49ers could be one of those teams like Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes in year one. I mean, they could move up and get Trey Lance in the draft, and they could add another dimension to that offense. There's no guarantee that Jimmy Garoppolo is back, and it's sort of that same plotting offense that we've seen. And to kind of further that point along, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo could be back in New England, where he's had a lot of success, and the Patriots could be knocking off the Bills again and making trouble in the playoffs, deep in the AFC playoffs. Race. So I think that there's just so many uncertainties that have not been filled in yet to the point where I don't know. You have to like the Rams too. I mean, they went all in on the Matt Stafford deal, and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the NFC as well.
I have one wish for 2021 offseason, and that's that Jacoby Brissett ends up with a starting job somewhere. I want him to get another chance, and that's it.
Jake Brissett forever, man. Go get the bag.
Mm-hmm. All right, Connor, you will be back with Jenny Brentis on the Weak Side podcast. If any of you folks out there are not already subscribing, and I'm sorry because everyone out there is already subscribing, and I hate to repeat myself, but I know there's a few of you who don't, please do subscribe to the Weak Side podcast and check out Jenny and Connor. And I'll be back next week with someone, probably Connor. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, probably Connor.
I feel good about that, yeah.
The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced normally by Shelby Royston. Shelby's out this week. Scott Brody is pinch hitting. And Scott, by the way, is SI's executive producer of podcasts. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the Weak Side Podcast and the Albert Breer Show. That has Albert Breer on it, by the way. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts, and once you do subscribe, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.